And welcome to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to canceled television shows in the horror, science fiction, and fantasy genre. And I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And tonight's episode of Constantine is episode 5, Danse Vadou?
Vadou, yes.
Okay, I am pronouncing it correctly. And Mr. Seneca has the episode synopsis for us.
This episode was originally aired on November 21st, 2014. Constantine must form an unholy alliance with Papa Midnight when a voodoo ritual takes a deadly turn.
Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum. Where are you getting your opening, your little introduction? Because I have one different on IMDb.
Oh, really? I just go to Google and put in Constantine episode blah, and then it has this little box on the right-hand side that has the show, the season, the air date, and the little synopsis.
Oh, okay. Mine has, in New Orleans, Constantine's unusual knowledge of a string of crimes gets him into trouble with Detective Jim Corrigan. He must form an unholy alliance with Pop and Midnight, which is basically the rest of what you just said.
That's much better. Let me go to that one.
It's okay. We don't need to do it over again.
Okay.
Right. This episode opens up with our titular DC comic book character, Jim Corrigan, pissing in an alley as he's showing his badge to a up-and-coming singer who's trying to make a career of her life.
Now, this is a typical scene in New Orleans. I've been there. Yeah, a drunk pissing on the side of a building in the French Quarter, kind of a regular thing. But being that he's a detective, he probably shouldn't be doing that. But I think this sets him up as for, like, you know, yeah, he's an asshole.
He flashes that badge to show his authority that he's allowed to pee in that alley.
Yeah, that no one's going to actually, you know, trump that.
It reminds me of a scene from the X-Files movie where Scott Mulder, Fox Mulder, goes to piss in the alley. Michael Landau, who's the special guest in the movie, steps out and says, is that official police business that you're doing?
It's his business, for sure.
And Mulder's like, if you're going to question me, you're going to come over here and help me.
Hold my dick, yeah.
Basically. That kind of reminds me of. And then, of course, this stab-happy bitch gets a little cray-cray in the alley, just starts going a little nuts with the scissors after asking her, am I pretty?
Do I look pretty? Am I pretty? Like, it's almost like a Vogue thing. Do I look pretty? You know, we're going to get into this, but, you know, that Jimmy shoots the ghost, ends up being ghost, misses entirely, probably because he's very drunk, and, of course, is a ghost. But this episode, the ghosts that basically appear are kind of harking back to legends of yore. So this particular ghost with the scissors is a classic Japanese ghost. Her name is Kuchisaki Onna. Kuchisaki Onna was mutilated by her husband after he found out that she was cheating on him. Then he took a samurai sword and cut her face. Basically, you know, the entire idea was like, who will think you're beautiful now? And that kind of mutilation death, it traces back. I was able to trace it back to 1979, where the story kind of became pervasive in the Japanese culture. The original legend for her gives a bit of a background as to how to actually get away from her. So later in the episode, like, Chaz is actually the one that deals with her, which we might kind of go into it a little bit. But the original legend is that you had to give confusing answers to her question. So, like, if you said something like, not really, if you gave her confusing answers, then she would kind of look at you and then not know what to do and then give you time to run away. Or you could just throw hard candy or fruit at her. And apparently she loves candy and fruit.
So you just throw candy at a ghost and she'll eat it and go away?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like the old legend of vampires. You know, you had to throw the grains of rice or something, and they were obsessive compulsive enough to, like, pick up every single grain of rice before they could pursue you. So with her, it's hard candy and fruit.
That hackers back to another thing from the X-Files. Mulder throws a bunch of seeds on the ground and at the vampire. The vampire's like, oh, man, why'd you have to go and do that? And the vampire reaches down and starts having to count each and every single one of them. And then,
exactly.
This is in a report to Skinner, by the way, who was like, you threw seeds at him and he stopped to pick them up.
Yeah, you know, old legends do that, you know. Through time, this particular ghost has switched a bit of, as time goes on, legends change, And so in the modern legend, she does carry scissors. So that is a direct relation that they were talking about this particular ghost.
Do you think this was an inspiration? This ghost legend is also an inspiration for, like, The Grudge?
Maybe. I'd have to really look up as to what they were going off of for The Grudge.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time since I've seen that Sarah Michelle Gellar film.
Oh, well, I was talking about Ju-on, too.
Oh, yeah.
Ju-on being the original Japanese movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen the original, just the the USA version, which I would think is probably way more watered down than the Japanese version.
The actor Jim Corrigan is played by Emmett Scanlon, who has a career playing a character actor, was in the AD, The Bible Continues, as Saul, and was also in Guardians of the Galaxy. He played one of the guards who in the prison who gets roughed up by the Guardians as they're trying to leave. And what's kind of funny, incidentally enough, is that we're recording this episode on the weekend that King Arthur opens up. King Arthur, the Legend of the Sword, starring Charlie Hunnam, directed by Guy Ritchie. And Guy Ritchie made, you know, a point that this new King Arthur movie is a combination of the King Arthur legend and Snatch. And Emmett was in the TV series Snatch, where he met his wife, Claire Cooper, who's also a kind of a well-known character actor, being in many different things, dating all the way back to the Red Dwarf TV series.
Oh, love that one.
Yeah. So Emmett and his wife have a long history of being character actors. Then they switch over to the bunker. I'm sorry, the little mystical little bunker that
Supernatural
vault that John's in, and he's got the cigarette in his mouth, but he's not inhaling. So I guess the rules of NBC are he can't inhale. Because he's got the cigarette in his mouth.
In this episode, they do show that the cigarette is lit. It is in his mouth, but he's not really taking a drag. In the previous episodes, they haven't come as close as this episode to actually showing him smoking.
Mm. And
they're kind of riding the line there.
Yeah. Zed has a flashback to... it was such a quick flashback. I thought it was a little girl being taught how to shoot a gun by a woman. I thought that was Zed for a second there. Then I realized that woman is way... The person in the flashback is way too light-skinned to be Zed. And it's revealed to be Jim Corrigan learning how to shoot a gun to fend off somebody, which we don't learn who, but Jim does show up in one other episode, so we might get more of his backstory about what that's about later on. But we're not given very much about what his mother is trying to... teach him, why his mother is trying to teach him how to shoot, other than to defend himself against somebody they don't want in their lives.
Yeah.
I also want to point out that in the opening credits, this episode is executive produced by Mark Vernahan, and you're going to see his name in a ton of science fiction shows on television. Look him up on IMDb. The list is just too long to go into. Battlestar Galactica, Smallville, and many other things come to mind. In fact, Mark has also been on the Dr. Chris Radio Horror Show back in 2011.
Ooh, you should check that out.
And I also love to point out that I am very happy because this didn't happen years ago. In fact, it took an act of God by the great director Richard Donner, who directed The Omen and The Goonies, and of course connected to Constantine, Superman the movie. This episode is, it says, The Spectre, co-created by Jerry Siegel, who is the co-creator of The Man of Steel.
Lot of connections there.
Yes. In fact, for many years, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster did not get their names on the credits of anything that they created for DC Comics. And
now,
it was
why is that?
Because DC Comics was run by a bunch of assholes.
Oh, well, yeah.
And it was because Richard Donner found out from DC Comics they didn't want Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster's name in the credits for the opening of the Superman movie in 1978, that he was like, wait, why? Then I'm not releasing the movie. And they're like, you are. And he's like, I'm not. Unless you pay out what they're owed. Because then he hired lawyers for Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster to go after DC Comics for years of royalties. Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster at that time were penniless. One was living on a cot in his cousin's apartment in Brooklyn and blind. And the other one was working as a typesetter and not barely making any money.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And they – Richard Donner, the director, forced DC Comics to pay them out each $100,000.
Good for them. I mean, not getting credit for your work is one of the failings, I think, in the comic book industry and arts in general.
Especially, you know, for the creation of Superman.
No, yeah.
So anyway, long story short, I was very happy to see that Jerry Siegel got his name in the credits for being the co-creator of The Spectre, which first appeared in New Fun Comics number 52 in 1940, and was Jim Corrigan at the time.
Yeah, wasn't he killed by a mob boss?
There's a few different origins to The Spectre, but let's just go with that one.
Okay.
You know, he, basically.
Yeah, so, like, he was on his way to heaven, and then the angel, Michael, just kind of, you know, took him off to the side and said, oh, no, you're going to serve a greater purpose, and basically imbibed him with...
Yeah, he was basically, instead of dying, he was the earthly recipient of the Spectre, which is the avenging spirit of, in the embodiment of God's wrath. And he is always known in the DC Comics as being like one of the more hardcore heroes to deal with. He doesn't have any compulsions against taking out innocents in order to get to what he needs to get to.
Yeah, from what I've kind of seen of him, I have only read the Kingdom Come trade paperback for Spectre specifically.
Yes,
I did some research.
I'm glad you were able to read that. What did you think of Kingdom Come before we get back to the episode?
I really liked it. It gives kind of a different take, a narrative on what is good and what is evil,
mm-hmm.
and how heroes can be perceived as evil and vice versa.
And did you Superman like that? Kind of, oh, sorry.
Huh?
No, go ahead.
Oh, Superman kind of cloistering himself away from everyone, I think is kind of the natural progression of where that character would go anyway.
Now, did you like how at the very end of Kingdom Come, while Norman McKay has returned to his flock at his church and delivering a sermon, in the audience sitting next to his wife is Jim Corrigan?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of looking on there as if it's just I would say, like, God looking upon someone, like, I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
I really liked it. It was a nice touch.
And this is the first time we actually have seen a live-action Spectre. The only other version of the Spectre we ever got to see, and he doesn't have anything to do with the Spectre for his appearance, was on Gotham in the first season. Crispus Allen showed up, and he was the partner of Renee Montoya, the lesbian police officer. Who first appeared on the Batman the Animated Series. And he doesn't do anything Spectre-ish. He doesn't die, and so nothing really happens with him in that way. But he was kind of written off the show, and there's never been an explanation. It's like, oh, where the hell is Crispus Allen and Renee Montoya? They were on Gotham. Anyway, the third person to become the Spectre was Hal Jordan, a.k.a. the Green Lantern. He died for a little while after redeeming himself and then came back as the Spectre and was the Spectre for a while. And it's just a whole story about the Spectre I'm not going to get into because we could dedicate an entire episode of the podcast to that. But I'm glad that you were able to read Kingdom Come.
Yeah. And I did some research on it because Jim Corrigan does play a very integrated role in this episode. You know, he's this cop and kind of follows them throughout this whole adventure of you know, freeing these ghosts. Even though he's not quite sure what's going on, he kind of has a bit of a hint of the supernatural
mm-hmm.
from this experience in the opening.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that kind of coming to awareness that there is a world that is beyond his understanding as a physical cop on Earth. And that was actually nice to see. And then, of course, at the end with Zed's vision of him basically as the Spectre, I thought that was really good and kind of teasing on something a bit greater.
Yeah, that they probably would have done in a season two of the show, definitely. And you kind of now ask the question is like, well, you have five other shows, Warner Brothers, the fifth show recently, as of the recording of this episode, which is on Mother's Day, by the way. So happy Mother's Day, Mr. Zeneca.
Oh, thank you.
And happy Mother's Day to any of our listeners out there. We actually also have viewer mail to get to at the very end of the episode. As of the recording of this episode, it was announced earlier this week that both iZombie has been renewed and DC or CW has picked up Black Lightning. which they're going to retcon into the continuity of the DC comic shows, which we are currently covering, with revealing that Jefferson Pierce, the former district attorney, was once like a superhero back in his teen and 20s before the arrival of like Arrow and Flash and Supergirl and stuff like that. And he retired, and he's coming back out of retirement now. So he's now like an older – he's an older superhero now in his like 40s, maybe 50s. The actor who looks like he's playing him definitely looks a lot older. But the look of Black Lightning looks really cool. So I'm hoping maybe that will be another show we get some mystical mumbo-jumbo to show up in.
Love it. Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Can't wait for that.
One thing I'd like to point out for everybody listening, hitchhiking is bad, but picking up a hitchhiker can be even deadlier for that poor driver.
Yeah, yeah. So in this episode, we're dealing with a total of three ghosts. You know, there's the Kuchisake Onna ghost, the model with the mutilated face.
Yes, who looks
a
lot like
ghost.
Who looks a lot like Melina from Mortal Kombat. She's got a 10
does,
out of.
Does she does?
Yes.
Totally.
Not only the fact because the actress who plays her, Chasti Ballesteros, who is unbelievably gorgeous. Look at her other pictures online of other things that she has done. She has just got one of these amazing looking Asian American faces. Actually, she's Asian Canadian. She's not American. She's Asian Canadian. Excuse me. She just looks stunningly beautiful. But Melina has this like 10 out of 10 body, and she's got like a mask over her like horribly jagged teeth, disfigured face.
Hot still.
Yes, still hot.
That's my yum for me.
Yes, and this actress is actually going to be in this summer's crappy remake of The Mummy. So, shame on her.
I guess I got to do it.
Yeah, but she's also been on American Horror Story and iZombies actually this year.
Cool.
Yes.
So then with the third ghost that we have is basically an ghost that had guy that had cancer, and you know, he is now living with his widow. And due to him living with her, she is wasting away, basically in the same type of cancerous wasting that he had. So while we have like a verified legend as for Kuchisake Onna, we have a hitchhiking ghost, which is like a total urban legend. You know, it's the, you can actually find this, that this legend dates back to as late as the 1870s. In 1942 to 1943, there was a study, couple of people called Beardsley and Hankley, that went around and collected all of these urban legends. And when they traced back the hitchhiking ghost legend, they collected 79 accounts across the country of this hitchhiking ghost. And they basically fall within four different archetypes. One is where the hitchhiker gives an address that to the motorist, and then they can learn later about who this person was. And so 49 of those actually were part of that total of 79 accounts. One where the hitchhiker is later identified as a deity, you know, a god. So in Hawaii, there's a story where Pele is actually the hitchhiker and bestows the motorist with rewards of some sort.
Mm.
Then there's one where it's a story of usually a girl that meets at some place of entertainment like a dance and gives something like a jacket to gets a jacket to the motorist. So then the jacket or item is found later on her grave as basically a way to connect the person with the actual ghost. Then lastly, the hitchhiker is an old woman who basically prophesizes danger. And so then there's 9 of those examples in the 79. So most hitchhiking ghosts follow within those 4 archetypes. And so that's a very established, urban legend that they put into here. The third ghost is basically a vague concept of where, you know, back in the days, back before everyone knew what causes illnesses, they would think that if you were ill, it was actually a soul stealing. Like your soul was being sucked away and it was wasting you away. And that is basically prevalent in most like medieval learned about what causes things. You know, they had some pretty ridiculous ideas about actually what causes illnesses. But to have an entity stealing your soul and stealing your life force is kind of a concept that is very well embedded into the occult and mystical practices going back centuries.
The ghost, the ghost played by Chastity, the model ghost, as I'm going to call her. So we have the hitchhiking ghost, we have the model ghost, and we have the sun's ghost. We have the sun ghost. That way, we can easily identify them based on their.
Well, no, the sun was a hitchhiker. The grandson was a hitchhiker. So there's Clark and his wife. So that's a cancer ghost. There's a model ghost, the hitchhiker ghost, and the cancer ghost.
Okay, so the cancer ghost. The model ghost kills Chaz, but Chaz comes back to life.
Yeah.
Which is part of, like, something they have not explained yet other than John saying, not everything is as it appears, which we have another, like, you know, 7 episodes of the show left to go, so they'll hopefully get into Chaz, reason why Chaz is able to keep coming back to life.
Yeah. And they do actually explain it in the television series because, you know, you can find it online. But basically he's got a whole bunch of souls integrated with him that Constantine actually did from a nightclub fire, if I'm remembering correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So he has, like, a set number of lives to kind of draw from. And so, yeah, he can be killed multiple times. And I think Constantine did it personally because, you know, he's tired of watching his friends die.
Mm.
But, you know. Someone has to be there to kind of take the scissors in the chest, as it were.
Zed and John continue investigating, meeting with Philip's grandma, and they come up with one common name between all of the victims' families members is Papa Midnight.
Papa Midnight.
Who is behind it all, doing black magic, voodoo, weird dancing with a bunch of people in a big ceremony.
I wouldn't consider it black magic. You know, it's voodoo magic, which works on a different methodology and a different hierarchy than some of the other magic we've seen in the show. So, Papa Midnight, his rituals are basically to allow the grieving person to be able to speak to their dead relative, their dead friend, you know, the person whom they're most guilty over. And in so doing, he accidentally is releasing these spirits into the mortal realm. And these spirits have mass, they have, you know, the ability to interact with the world. They're not like a free-roaming spirit, as the Ghostbusters would say. They're not like a free-roaming spirit walking through walls. So, but he's inadvertently doing this. He doesn't know he's doing it, and when Constantine points that out, he basically calls him a liar, and then, you know, it gets proven otherwise when he visits the the cancer ghost and his wife, and just like recognizes, like, oh crap, yeah, this is bad. Because just seeing the wife just wasting away in front of his eyes, yet she's extremely happy. She's like so happy to have her husband back because, you know, it's her guilt and all these people's guilt that is really putting the power within the ghost to assume their forms and continue doing whatever it was that they were doing. So she's extremely happy he's there. She doesn't want him to leave, but yet, you know, it's still a ghost. He's still dead. And, you know, you kind of have to deal with that. Death is a part of life. So not black magic, but it's just voodoo magic.
John crashes, you know, the party, warning about Papa Midnight preying on innocent people's loss and sadness, which is, you know, kind of really pathetic.
Yeah, but you know what? You gotta make a dime, and a lot of people were involved in the original rituals to help these grieving people speak to their loved ones, and he thought it was harmless. You know, he thought it was harmless. Just like in voodoo, possession isn't a bad thing. Constantine mentions in here that he's not going to allow a Loa into his body because he's an exorcist, and he's totally opposed. You know, he grabs things out of people. He doesn't want them inside of him. Part of the magic of voodoo is to, for, like, extreme experienced practitioners is to allow the Loa to take control of your body, to be possessed, so then you are acting in the spirit of this deity. You know, the deity can do several things. They can basically create the magic right there. They have different personality traits that come out when you are possessed. Well, a friend of my boyfriend's actually fairly regularly, you know, he is a voodoo priest, but fairly regularly gets possessed by Baron Samedi. And when he does, you can totally tell because his personality completely shifts.
Hold on a second. Your boyfriend's friend gets possessed by the ghost of a baron.
No, no, not a ghost. Baron Samedi is not a ghost. He's a Loa. So he is a deity.
Okay. So he gets possessed by a deity.
Yes.
And we know that he's just not the world's greatest actor because...
because, okay, he has wide expanse.
For anyone who's not familiar, doesn't listen to the Supernatural Creatures and Lore, I do not believe in ghosts or possession or demons.
Just because you don't believe it doesn't mean that something's not going on.
Even
if we're not explaining exactly what it is accurately, doesn't mean there's something not going on, because of course you cannot prove a negative. The reason why that he feels and everyone around him feels that he is possessed is because his personality completely shifts. He is not aware what happens when it happens. He will have wide expanses where his memory is basically erased by this action, and he will do things that are completely outside of his normal to do. As the entity Baron Samedi into his body, he has played practical jokes on people. He has drunk an immense amount of alcohol to the point where he should have actually died, because he's not really a drinker. But because he was possessed, he was able to do that. He went to a Pope's altar, you know, this is back when the Pope was going to be around, Pope's altar, and then started giving away all of the things on the altar to, like, passers-by. And that's not something that this guy would do on the ordinary basis. There are a few things. And energetically, people that are very sensitive to energy can see a shift. There is a Loa that has a bull type of persona. And people possessed by this will then start acting like a physical bull. It's a little jarring to watch if you're an outsider, but this is a great honor to be possessed. But of course, Constantine is not about that at all.
The Rising Darkness, which has been alluded to several times and which is coming up in the two-part episode that we're going to be getting to in a few weeks, which will be the first time we actually are covering two episodes in one episode of the podcast, just because they happen to be a part one and part two, and we want to stay on a schedule leading up to the debut of the Friday the 13th TV series on Friday the 13th in October, causes Papa Midnight and John to team up. The enemy of my enemy ends up being my friend. The one thing that I love Papa Midnight calls John Constantine when they're trying to perform the spell together is a jackass of all trades and master of none.
Line.
I was like, that is awesome.
Totally.
And that is after their pissing contest and them start getting into a fight with each other, which is like, oh shit, it's gonna go down. Not quite.
Yeah. And their argument is really about the two different styles of magic that they do. You know, Constantine is this, you know, yeah, he's of all trades and all traditions. So he's a dabbler of, you know, Catholicism, occult tradition, and he even touches some voodoo and some African traditions, and you know, some Judeo occult practices, and etc. So he's drawing from a huge pool of different things, and then he also creates his own stuff. You know, he does his own magic too. Papa Midnight is a voodoo practitioner. He is a voodoo priest. His tradition is set. He has a hierarchy. There is a spiritual course that you have to run. The traditions that he does are very, very powerful. So when you're equating the power levels, if you want, Dragon Ball Z there, but if you want to equate the power levels.
I'll be honest with you. I tried watching Dragon Ball Z one time. It was when it came to the WB, and I watched the first episode. And that was it. I just could not get into Dragon Ball Z. I know there are like 1,000 episodes. I know how insanely popular it is. I just could not do it for the life of me.
No. I'm with you there. I'm with you. The only way that I can watch Dragon Ball Z is to watch the Dragon Ball Z abridged. That's the only way I find it tolerable. It's so slow.
Yeah, no, give me Gundam Wing. And yes, I know Gundam is insanely political for a show that has to deal with, like, giant robots versus giant robots or mech warrior armor. But still, yeah, Dragon Ball Z was nothing I could ever get into. What I think is kind of funny is that this is something that Sam and Dean Winchester have never tried. Get rid of a ghost by hitting it with your car. That's what they do. Yeah. They get rid of Philip by hitting him with the car, but then he shows it back up again asking for the ride. So it's like ghosts don't maintain any type of memories at all?
No.
No? Because he doesn't seem to remember that he just got a ride from Detective Corrigan in Zed.
Yeah, no. It's like a skipped record.
Exactly.
You know, you'll perform all the things that they did on the very last moments on Earth and then just kind of go back to the beginning. It's like, skip, back to the beginning. Skip, back to the beginning. You know, that's another reason why Chaz is such a great kind of assistant to the model spirit, because, you know, she's just killing people. Jim Corrigan and Zed are in the car kind of taking the kid, you know, through the whole process in order for the kid not to actually get a ride in someone else's car. They want the kid in their car. So they pick up the kid, they drive, and then at the appropriate spot, he vanishes, appears in front of the car. Zed drives through him because she knows that he's not actually there. And then they do that again. You know, repeat and repeat. Trying to find a different way for him to kind of come to the understanding that, you know, to deviate from their usual pattern.
It's revealed that the three women are actually behind all of this just by their emotions, keeping the spirits of their dead ones alive.
That emotion is a very, very powerful force. Like, the first time that, you know, Constantine and Papa Midnight have the bodies kind of stacked up, and they're on top of the veve of Baron Samedi. So it's the drawing on the floor, if you notice, drawing on the floor, usually in piles of cornmeal, gunpowder, flour, brick powder, that type of thing. But the symbol that's on the ground in this ritual is the veve of Baron Samedi. First time they do this, and it doesn't work because they don't have these women, because the power of that grief is so strong. Because if it was so strong to kind of bring them back, only them kind of getting over this emotion will allow them to be released. So these three women, and then when they actually get the women together and they're allowed to kind of let go of their loved ones or their guilty conscience. There's a scene with Papa Midnight where he asks his dead twin sister, you know, the skull of his dead twin sister, whose soul is in hell. And I thought that was kind of interesting that he brings out the skull, and I took a really close look at it. Now, I was very determined to figure out what exactly was this, whether it was just make-believe or some legit stuff. And on the skull, it's kind of carved in there. It actually translates to brother, protect sister, protect brother.
Oh.
And the symbols on the outside are mouth, eye, the unknown, window, and sister.
John and Pop at Midnight deal away with the spirits by having the people let them go, and they're burning their bodies. I always say to a ghost, if they see a light, go towards it and leave us alone.
Yeah, that's pretty much a standard exorcism practice. Is, you know, they have to exorcise a room from a spirit or whatnot. So go towards the light. The light is calling you. Yeah, then. You know, all types of, you know, hippy-dippy bullshit, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know there's an exorcist porno? The Sexorcist?
That would not surprise me, because there is an Edward Penis Hands.
Yeah, and it's, like, legitimately, like, as accurate to the movie as you could possibly get.
How can you improve on that whole crucifixion masturbation scene?
I don't remember that part of it. I've only seen the clip where they have to, the young priest is trying to exorcise the demon out of her by fucking her. And, like, there's just, like, but the bed is covered in her pea soup. It's so gross. But the chick who plays her is, like, well known for being in these, like, parody porno films. Okay. April O'Neil, I think, is the actress's name. The porn star's name.
Isn't that also the name of the girl in the yellow jumpsuit that the Ninja Turtles hang around with?
Yes, and in fact, she did also star in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle porno. She gets screwed by Casey Jones and has sex with the turtles. Never mind the fact that if a giant mutant turtle did exist, his penis, a turtle's penis, is like the entire length of their body. It would like ruin a human woman. But that's a whole other podcast that you want to start, so.
Yeah. Talking about sex, yeah.
Listen to Mr. Zeneca's podcast about weird porn coming up on her, whatever your podcast is going to get called.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's still in the formation stages. But well,
let me tell you, that coworker I was telling you about, she'd be more than interested to help you start that. It absolutely, because that was like her whole life until she took this extremely vanilla job that we work at.
Yeah, I would be happy for that.
Yeah.
But I do have something to give you a little bit of an Easter egg on, if you're a Hellblazer reader. In Hellblazer Confessional, which is a special number one, or you could find it in the Tainted Love trade paperback, Constantine actually has an experience being a hitchhiker and being kind of hit on and kind of creeped up on by the person that picked him up, much like Philip does in the very beginning of this show. You know, he gets picked up as this ghostly hitchhiker, and the person that picks him up very much like grabs his leg and creeps up on him. So very similar to what was actually in the comic. The difference here is that in the comic, Constantine ends up kind of popping his knee up, and which shoves a double-sided razor blade through this guy's face, and turns out that this guy is actually a priest. Typical. But
Yowie.
Yeah, and then, of course, in the show, he is a victim of a car crash. But that's a little Easter egg for you comic readers out there.
When Zed touches Jim's hand, Jim, just as after Jim points out that Zed has been reported missing by her family for a long time, and there's no other information given about this, as it's the end of the episode, but it's to obviously set up a larger Zed storyline later on in this season.
Yeah, and it's kind of alluded to that they might be abusive through things that she said previously, you know, and there was a good reason why she was running away and kind of keeping silent.
Yeah.
But, let's take some emails.
There was two emails that came back in, that came in, one at the very beginning of Constantine and one at the very end of the previous show that we covered, which was Kindred the Embraced. I will pull them up right now. Okay, here we go. One comes from Brian Bickner and says, Dear Dead TV Podcast, I really appreciate you guys giving some light and information to a canceled TV series such as Kindred the Embraced. I always did love it, even though I didn't get a chance to catch it when it was on Fox like yourself, Dr. Chris. You said that you caught it eventually on VHS many years later. I, too, rented it from my local video store, and it was one of those shows that always eluded me, and I was finally able to grab it. I'm very happy that you guys actually went into some of the backstory of some of the clans. Even though you're not a Vampire the Masquerade show, you did a decent enough job trying to give enough information about the clans, their history, and a bit of information, because your TV series, because your podcast does actually deal more with the TV series and not the Vampire the Masquerade role-playing game. I still appreciate it nonetheless. Looking forward to you guys covering Constantine and whatever other show you happen to be covering coming up soon. Thank you.
Aww.
That was from Brian. Thank you, Brian. And we have one from Angelique. Her last name is too hard to pronounce, so I will just say her first name. Angelique says that she was a fan of the Trick or Treat Radio, which is where Raven Shadow was on. And Raven Shadow will be joining us again in October, because we're going to be doing, like, multiple things that one week in October. We're going to be doing an entire episode dedicated to Swamp Thing, the animated series, and Raven Shadow will be back on for that. And then that Friday, we're going to have two episodes of Friday the 13th, the first two episodes of Friday the 13th, the TV series, on with us. And that will also have a special guest, maybe in time for the first episode. the author of a Friday the 13th exhaustive episode guide. This woman is crazier than we are.
She'll fit right in.
Oh my god, I cannot believe how detailed that book is. Anyway, Angelique's email goes on to say that so she followed Raven Shadow over from the Trick or Treat Radio, and she really appreciates us going into a lot of great detail about the comic books of Constantine and giving a lot of insight in our opinions about the Hellblazer series, which she's such a huge fan of, and she didn't know that there was a Constantine TV series until it was actually canceled and Constantine showed up on Arrow, which is in season 4. He helps resurrect Sarah Lance, the White Canary, who eventually goes on to the DC Legends of Tomorrow television series. Angelique says that she looks forward to hearing more of our episodes, and she will follow us on Twitter as well, at ChrisDSAV. Well, thank you very much, Angelique.
Thank you, Angelique. That was lovely.
Yes, yes, definitely. So if you do want to send us an email, if you are listening to this podcast, you can catch us on thatradioofhorror@gmail.com to send us an email. Constantine did air back in November of 2014, and IGN gave their review of it. I'm not going to read the entire review, but they do not think that this episode was as good as the previous week's episode, but still a solid sign that the series is showing a strong connection to the DC Universe by introducing the character of Jim Corrigan. Solving the killer ghost mystery may have brought about more bickering than action, but Dance Vadu, excellent team building episode between Chaz, Zed, and John, in order to use Papa Midnight to help them through their bungling, was a really nice touch too. Jim Corrigan, even though he wasn't that big of a prominent player in this episode, it was still great to they said Jim Corrigan, while not long for this world, added more scruffiness to an already tattered team of black magic busters. So most of the reviews for Constantine have always been very good. Why was the show canceled, NBC? Fuck you.
Yeah. one can only hope that it will come back at some point in the future.
Yeah, there was another show that just got announced to be canceled, but apparently it's not, so I guess we're not going to be covering it anytime soon. There was a time travel TV series on right now.
Time travel?
Yeah, it's actually created by Eric Kripke, the creator of Supernatural. And it's called Timeless, and it did get renewed, and NBC did not cancel it, actually. So it has been renewed for a second season. It's about three time travelers who go around dealing with crimes throughout time. But it got picked up for a second season by NBC, which is good, so we won't be canceling it. And another show I thought maybe we would eventually be getting to, but is not quite yet, The Exorcist was picked up for a second season.
Ah, all right. Well, I think we've got our docket full with Friday the 13th, the series.
And the cartoons between them, yes.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's a lot of episodes.
It's 72 right. episodes of Friday the 13th will be on before we get to another normal television series, which I had said we need to give something to the ladies for a female-centered show, and I think I picked Witchblade.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is, like, really cheap. You want to talk about... You know, like a good deal, $10 at your local Walmart or Best Buy will get you the entire series of Witchblade, which was 22 episodes.
Not bad, yeah.
Not bad. Cool. And Friday the 13th, the next show we're covering, $30 gets you all 72 episodes.
Yes.
So that's a really freaking good deal. Yeah, that box set is like, again, I've seen it between $28.99 and $29.99. So go to your local Amazon or I believe you can also watch it on Shudder. Maybe Shudder will give us some sponsorship. Shudder is the horror Netflix, basically.
Yeah. Never know.
Mm.
So Dr. Chris, what do you think is this episode's douchebag moment?
Oh, yes. We didn't quite get to that. Douchebag and the yum moment of the episode. The douchebag moment would be Pop at Midnight in possession of his twin sister's dead skull, with her hair still attached to it. What the fuck?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty douchebaggy, but I think for me, the douchebag moment is when Constantine and Papa Midnight are bickering to each other about how powerful their magics are.
Yes.
It's basically like a magical dick measuring contest. So I think that was pretty douchebaggy.
Correct. And the yum moment goes to the actress who played the model who was brought back from the dead, the Misaki Ross model played by Chastity Chastity. I don't know if that's how you pronounce that name without the it's missing usually, like, it's usually like Chastity, but it's Chastity Ballesterosis. Ugh. I'm not a linguist, people.
She's definitely a yum. Also, there is a moment where Zed and Constantine are checking into the hotel and they're getting separate rooms. And Constantine says, "I respect everyone I sleep with. I just like to know something about them first." And I was like, you know, that's good. Like, every time that he has a moment where he's going to go into that flirtatious realm, it goes into safe, sane, and consensual. And I appreciate that. Yum.
I also like to point out that Chastity's very first role, her very first acting gig ever, was in 2009, was on a little TV series called Smallville.
Yeah.
Strong DC connections here, people.
Nice.
Yes, definitely. And she's been in many other things. I love the look of this actress. I'm just absolutely in love with her. I'm going to post a picture of her on our Facebook page, the Dead TV Podcast, where you can leave us comments, join there, and find out more information about what we're going to be doing and upcoming episodes, and where we will post links to episodes that we are going to air. You can also find me at ChrisDSAV on Twitter.
And you can find me at Elegantly Kinky on Twitter, and you can go to my website at elegantlykinky.com.
And I also found out that all these episodes of Constantine are on CWSeed.com as well. CWSeed is where they will post all of their previously aired Warner Brothers shows, so you don't have to buy the box set. You can watch the episodes for free on the CWSeed. I don't know if that's a paying site or not, but you can double check them there. And Constantine, of course, is available on DVD on the Warner Brothers Archive website. And please pick up the graphic novel we mentioned earlier in the episode at your local comic book store. I recommend That's Entertainment if you happen to live here in Massachusetts, or the Hall of Comic Books. Kingdom Come, fantastic book. Spectre plays a prominent role through that story.
Great storyline.
Excellent storyline. And if you can hunt them down, I believe they're collected in trade paperback, the Jim Aparo Spectre comics are fantastic. And I leave you now in this episode as I say goodbye to Mr. Zeneca with a quote from the Spectre.
"I am the Spectre.
This is impossible!
In the land beyond the living, all things are possible."
And also thanks to Jess O'Lantern for providing our music for us. I will see you in about 2 weeks, Mr. Zeneca.
All right, see you then.